Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Just days after Russia's grand display of its military might during Victory Day parades, Putin's forces have suffered a serious setback on the battlefield. New British intelligence reports say that the Russian army experienced heavy losses when the Ukrainians destroyed a pontoon bridge as it tried to cross a river in the Donbass region. For some military analysis, I'm joined on the line by Kevin Byrne, retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Security and Safety Auditor. I'm also joined by Keir Giles, a senior consulting fellow at Chatham House and author of Russia's War on Everybody. Very good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Philippa.
Same question to both of you to begin, please. Kevin, big picture, where are we?
Well, we're kind of like World War One to some extent in that the defences have been dug in by the Ukrainian forces because they've been there for many, many years. And the Russians don't do defence very well. They do advance as much as they can. That's their doctrine. Hit everything with shells, move in with your armoured vehicles and your tanks and see if you can take the ground. But it hasn't worked out that well because, as you know, Kiev itself was a total failure and they've pulled back those forces. What they haven't reckoned on, I think, is the support. First of all, the fighting spirit of the Ukrainian troops. That's very, very good at the moment. And secondly, the equipment. And can I just make a reference to what I know they have got because I saw it on television myself. The forces on the front line who were seen by Sky News readers or viewers 2 days ago, they've got brand new M4 rifles, which is American stock. They've got, I thought I saw a Barrett Light 50 sniper rifle. That alone is worth $10,000 and is quite rare. And they've got anti-armour weaponry of a very high calibre. There's lots of it lying around in the trenches. So they're ready and they're attacking. And then they're shooting back and moving forward to take positions from the Russians who have held them for a while. So it's not going well at all. That's apart from the artillery units and the drones supporting those that have been brought on stream quite recently.
Yeah, that's what I was going to just ask you about, because while guns are important, this is really, this phase of the war now, artillery is much more key.
Yeah, people don't understand how artillery works. The Russians fire artillery from fields. Again, that was on TV and video released from the Defense Department. And they're lined up like parade, they fire. And they go, the shells fire maybe 40 kilometres, so they're out of range of anything that can counter-battery fire them. That's what the Russians didn't have to fear, but now they have to, because 90 M77 howitzers and about 25 tracked versions of the same thing, 155 calibre weapons, are being supplied, and the Ukrainians have been trained in Germany and elsewhere to use them. So for the first time, the Russian artillery will be in serious danger, because the computers supplied by the Americans and by NATO generally will be able to work out where the shells are coming from, and within 90 seconds, 2 minutes max, counter-battery fire can attack those sites, so they're vulnerable for the first time. It's a serious increase.
How are they vulnerable, though, Kevin? Because the pictures that we have seen of some of the Russian artillery is that it is tracked, so it can fire and then withdraw, can't it?
And that's what it does, and that is the whole success of artillery units. But they haven't been suffering too much from suppressive fires, from counter-battery fire from the Ukrainian artillery, because they haven't been massed as much. Now the computers supplied by the Americans will make the calculations very quickly. No more pencil and paper working out where the rounds are coming from. They can receive incoming fire within a very short time. So the Russians won't be secure. They'll have to move from where they're firing within 2 minutes, or they can expect incoming fire, which will destroy them. Once your shell lands on your gun, you're gone.
Okay. Keir, is there anything that you would add or subtract there to Kevin's big picture analysis?
No, I think Kevin's absolutely on track. It's very true that some parts of this conflict have been looking like the First World War for a long time, that deeply entrenched system of fortifications in the Donbass. But also around the periphery there, you've got the Ukrainians using those Western advanced weapons and also using their initiative to counterattack, to push the Russians back, and in some cases we hear even pushing deep into Russian territory. But the artillery systems that the Russians are using are vulnerable now, not just to counter-battery fire, but it does also seem that Ukrainian units are operating well behind Russian lines. And we've seen Russia taking casualties, losing vehicles in areas that they've occupied now for years, since the seizure of eastern Ukraine in 2014.
This is fascinating, because we saw an image which was purportedly shot very, very close to the Sea of Azov in an area that was in Russian control for quite a long time, of a tank being blown up and the turret being sent hundreds of metres skyward. but it was where this was happening that was of greatest interest. What do you think is going on there? Who could have been responsible for that if the video is correctly attributed and it was correctly identified where it happened?
Well, yes, that video, of course, came from a Chinese news report, and that's not somewhere that you'd accuse of propaganda for the Ukrainians. But yes, there's a lot of different possible explanations for what's happening there, and nobody, as far as I know, has nailed down precisely how the Ukrainians are reaching that far behind enemy lines. We do know that they had highly mobile teams of special forces that were roaming the battlefield, independent of their own side, and also well behind where the Russians might have thought they were in safe areas, and it could be that those are now at work, again, striking deep behind Russian lines. But there's also this pattern of unexplained incidents in Russia itself, where on top of the normal background noise of fires and disasters and explosions that you have in Russian cities, there's a lot more going on. Oil depots going up in fires, ammunition depots blowing up, all of these things that are happening really across a wide area of Russia, much more intensively than you'd normally expect.
Okay, so three different strategies being employed here, behind enemy lines, within Ukraine, within Russia itself, and then this old-style World War One almost approach of stalemate artillery across two different front lines. When does the weather come into play on this artillery battle, or could we end up seeing those two front lines stuck exactly where they are now in eastern Ukraine, with them just pounding the hell out of each other for months to come? Kevin.
That's a good question. The weather is not bad. I just looked at the weather. It's 22 degrees, I think, in Odessa this morning. So the summer has come in a big way. Normally, that would be useful for the invaders. You know, you can move forward and so forth. But you must forget the other aspect of this is while it's World War One in the diggings, it can be 21st century war because they've got new Phoenix ghost drones. Now, that's like the Switchblade. I know not much about the Phoenix ghost drone, but the Switchblade is a loitering munition drone flown by somebody within 10 or 12 kilometers. And it's a suicide drone, so they just literally fly around like a little glider or a little aircraft, and they wait for the targets to come in, and they will attack a tank or an armored vehicle, and they're guaranteed to destroy it from above. So this kind of thing is very frightening for those who are on the ground trying to move forward. Weather will not affect this because they have, you know, visual aids can help them. So these are aspects. They have got hundreds of these things out there. The Turks have also supplied them with drones. So the Ukrainians can have a very full picture of the battlefield from many miles away. And this is something they haven't really had up to now, but they're using it very, very well. Their fighting spirit, as I mentioned, is very good. The training is second to none, and they're getting all the support. For example, for the artillery rounds, allegedly, I heard Mr. Biden, I think, president of the US, mentioning he was going to supply 100,000 rounds of 155mm ammunition. A very strange statement for a president to make, I thought.
Why?
Because he's specifically giving enough ammunition for the war to go on for months. You know, I can't remember what a brigade uses, but the guns they have there can fire up to 1,000 rounds each per day, although you have to cool down the guns later. But if that's the case, you've got a number of weeks of fighting. He was giving the notice to people that this isn't a short-term support. The Americans will be behind the Ukrainian forces for a long time to come.
Keir, final question to you. The big picture here, do you think that the Ukrainian army is being armed and supplied for a stalemate, or sufficiently well that they might actually be able to turn the tide?
Well, they've already been equipped to turn the tide, belatedly, because Ukraine did ask for some time for the kind of weapon systems that would allow it to carry the fight to the Russians and actually start to liberate the occupied territories and relieve their citizens there who are under Russian rule. They're starting to get them in the end, armored vehicles that are coming from European stocks, the American howitzers that Kevin was mentioning, and plenty more. But of course, Ukraine faces another problem. Over and above the fighting spirit and the supplies of weaponry, they're also dealing with the challenge that Russia is targeting their economy. It's trying to throttle them as a state by interdicting their exports, by hammering their civilian infrastructure with long-range air and missile strikes. So they need economic and humanitarian support just as much as they do military.
Keir Giles and Kevin Byrne, thank you both very much for joining me this morning. Now, coming up after the break, we speak to two dentists about how they are making things easier for their young patients with autism and sensory issues.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.